Jumping guiltily, Robert spun around. Bethany stood behind him, her arms full of branches. He cleared his throat.
"I see you have been busy."
She shrugged and nodded toward Berserker. "So who was consulting whom?" Relief flooded him. She had not heard.
"Actually, Berserker was just seeking my advice on how he might woo a certain mare in my brother's stables."
"Ah." The faint shadow of a smile touched her lips. "I'll leave you to your manly discussion then and see if I can't put together a fire while we wait for the others to join us." He shook his head.
"I shall see to that. You should rest."
She stared up at him for a long moment, eyes haunted.
"I need something to do. Something to occupy my mind and hands while I wait for your friends to bring me news of Josh."
Again Robert felt tenderness rise within him.
"Then we shall build the fire together."
Nodding, she turned and led the way to the center of the small clearing. A couple of additional trips into the forest were required to produce enough wood and kindling for a fire that would burn most of the night. When all had been arranged to their mutual satisfaction, Robert retrieved the flint he would use to strike a spark.
"You're going to light it with that?" she asked, kneeling beside him.
"Aye."
"Really? I've never seen someone do that before."
He looked down at the fine-grained quartz in his hand, then met her curious gaze.
"How do you start a fire?"
"With matches." He frowned. "Those wooden splinters secreted away within the handle of your blade?"
"Aye."
That seemed unlikely. Without flint, how would she spark a flame to burn the wood? Tilting his head to one side, he cocked a brow.
"I shall demonstrate the use of flint, if you will do the same with your matches."
She smiled.
"Deal."
Beth had a much more difficult time sparking a fire with the flint than Robert did with the matches. The expression on his face when the little splinter he held ignited after a single strike was classic.
"Had I not produced the flame myself, I would suspect sorcery," he breathed, eyes wide. "May I strike another?"
She couldn't resist his boyish smile, so full of delight and eagerness. Nodding her permission, she watched him remove another match from her knife handle and explained the purpose of the colored tip. He did not seem at all like a man bent on treachery. She had no bad vibes and read no deceit in his gaze, no subterfuge. Neither when he questioned her about the match, nor when he taught her how to use the flint with such patience, encouraging her and praising her when she succeeded. For the past hour or so, Beth had fought an inner battle within herself. Her instincts, which had always guided her so well in the past, kept urging her to give Robert her trust, while her brain forbade it. She simply could not understand what had happened to her, what, if any, role Robert and his friends might have played in it, or what possible purpose it would serve. Everything inside her told her she was no longer near Houston, and with the temperature dropping as the sun set, she had to doubt she was even in Texas. No place in Texas was this chilly at night during the summer, even after a cold front. So where the hell was she? She thought again of those wooden wagon wheel ruts. Pennsylvania? How in the world would she have come to be there? Someone would have had to move her. But who? Logic would indicate that Robert and his friends must have played a role in it, since they were the only people she had encountered since waking. But they could have harmed her in 100 different ways by now and hadn't. They had all been kind to her instead. Yes, they were weird. Their determination to adhere to their medieval role play seemed insane under the circumstances, but again, they hadn't harmed her. Those instincts of hers kept telling her to trust Robert, while her brain advised her to run and seek help. But where would she run? She and Robert had encountered not one other person in the 2 hours they had searched for Josh, and she had seen no structures whatsoever on the road. So where could she go? If she even made it back to the road she and Robert had traveled, she doubted she would make it very far on foot.
No street lights had lined the thoroughfare, and the road's surface had been so rough and pitted that if she used her phone's flashlight to look for Josh, instead of keeping it trained on her feet, she would probably step in one of the deep gouges and twist her ankle. She glanced at the dense foliage around her. Since she didn't know where she was, Beth had no idea what wild animals might lurk in these forests, and if she lucked out and actually ran into other people, based on what she had observed in the bounty hunting business, strangers would be just as likely to take advantage of the situation and harm her as they would be to help her. With the sun setting and her lack of knowledge regarding the landscape, sticking with Robert, at least for the time being, seemed like the safest option. Unless her intuition, for once, was wrong, and he and his friends weren't members of a reenactment group at all, but instead were escapees from a mental institution who actually believed they were medieval knights. Not all crazy people were violent, after all. Her stomach twisted into a tighter knot. Or perhaps she was the crazy one. What were the chances that she had gotten shot, passed out, and been transported to a place that boasted both a thriving Amish community and a medieval reenactment group? She sighed. If Robert and his friends were neither crazy nor acting, and she was of sound mind herself, what was she supposed to conclude? That they really were medieval knights, and she had somehow traveled back in time? Not. Time travel wasn't possible, not outside of fiction. Every member of the scientific community she had seen speak on the subject had agreed that time travel was a technological feat that had not yet been accomplished and thus remained purely theoretical. Besides, she had seen no time machine, and if getting fatally shot made one travel through time, then 13,000 people in the United States would be hurled back in time every year. She was pretty sure that would have made the news. Robert raised his head suddenly. Beth followed his gaze to Berserker. The horse stared into the forest, ears pricking as if it detected some sound she couldn't. Robert rose abruptly. Gripping her arm, he pulled Beth up, dragged her behind him, then drew his sword. Gaping, Beth offered no protest as he pressed her close to his back with his left hand and held his sword out in front of him with his right. Someone, or something, approached. Her eyes fell to his weapon. He actually thought he could protect her with a sword? Her heart began to beat a little faster, with nerves and with something else, too. Relief, perhaps? Robert didn't want to harm her. He wanted to protect her. And she wasn't about to let him get hurt doing it. A sword, no matter how impressive its length, weight, and sharpness, could not compete with firearms. Turning slightly to one side, Bethany eased her knee up until she could reach her ankle and removed her .22. Robert's broad, mailed back blocked her view as she flipped the safety off and lowered her foot to the ground. Rising onto her toes, she clutched his tunic to steady herself and peeked over his shoulder. "Beth," he warned in a low voice, his left hand clenching in her shirt, "remain behind me." "I am." Even as she spoke, she extended her right arm beneath his and aimed her .22 at the forest Berserker studied so intently. Robert's chin dipped as he glanced down at her weapon. Berserker nickered a greeting to whomever or whatever approached. The muscles beneath the tunic Beth clutched relaxed. Robert spoke over his shoulder, amusement lightening his voice. "You may lower your weapon. 'Tis one of my men." As soon as she did, he let go of her and turned around, lowering his sword tip until it nearly touched the ground. Beth couldn't quite decipher his expression as she took a step back to place a little distance between them. "What?" "You sought to protect me," he stated. "So?" When his teeth flashed in a grin, she realized she should have denied it. "How do you know I wasn't just protecting myself?" she bluffed. "Your flushed cheeks tell me otherwise." Damn her fair skin for betraying her. "Okay," she admitted. "I was protecting you. So what?" You were protecting me. Robert shook his head. Were I not so relieved to discover that you have not taken me into dislike, I would feel insulted. Beth rolled her eyes. Why? Because the tiny, helpless woman was trying to defend the big bet. Wait a minute. What? What was that about being glad I don't dislike you? His smile contorting into a grimace, he motioned to her handgun. Mayhap you should sheathe your weapon now. Oh, no, you don't. Answer the question. He released a beleaguered sigh. 'Tis only that I thought mayhap I said or... He looked away, a slight flush darkening his tanned, masculine cheeks. Did something to offend you? If I did, he hurried to say, 'twas not my intention, and I do ask your forgiveness. Beth stared up at him, another chunk of the ice her mind had struggled to fill her heart with, melting. You didn't offend me, Robert, she assured him softly. I'm just worried, and scared, and confused. I don't understand what has happened to me, or why it has happened, or, she shrugged, whom I should trust. Trust me, he said, his gaze sharpening. You can trust me, Beth. I vow it. I want to. I really do. And she did, though she probably shouldn't. The heart that had just melted turned over in her breast when he offered her a gentle smile. Then I hope that my men will bring you good tidings. The foliage across the clearing parted as Adam's horse nosed its way into view. When his eyes lit upon them, standing a couple of feet apart, each with weapons in hand, the quiet man halted. Is aught amiss? He queried carefully. Nay, Robert answered. Beth returned the .22 to her ankle sheath, then approached the warrior. Did you find Josh? Is he okay? Adam dismounted, face sober. I regret that I did not find him, nor did I find any sign of the marauders who attacked you. Her throat began to close up. What about the car? Did you find our car? A silver four-door in desperate need of a wash? His gaze went briefly to Robert. Nay, I encountered no such thing. Robert settled a large, warm hand on her shoulder and gave it a light squeeze. Michael and Stephen have not yet returned, he murmured, compassion in his gaze. Mayhap they have had more success. She swallowed hard. And if they haven't? Then I shall send 20 men to search the forest as soon as we reach Fosterley. Numb, Beth allowed him to guide her over to the fire, where Robert sat close without touching her, offering his support while they waited. Maybe we should have kept looking, she murmured. Maybe we shouldn't have stopped. Images of Josh, lying out there, bleeding from his wounds, assaulted her. What if he bled out overnight? Searches are best carried out in daylight, Robert said. At night, even with torches, we could easily pass by him without seeing him. And if he is unable to call for help... She closed her eyes. Please let him be well enough to call for help. A short time later, the soft sounds of horse hooves accompanied by off-key whistling caught her ear. She stood. When Stephen entered the small clearing alone, her heart sank. What news? Robert questioned him, rising beside her. Stephen dismounted and somberly delivered his report. My search bore no success. I regret that I could not bring you better tidings, Mistress Bethany. Hope vanished. Thank you anyway, she said through numb lips. Beth retook her seat by the fire and stared blankly into the dancing flames, but its warmth could not penetrate the cold that encased her. The men cast her sympathetic glances and tiptoed around the clearing, as though they thought the slightest sound or disturbance might set her to weeping and wailing at the top of her lungs. She swallowed hard. Perhaps they were right. As she awaited Michael's arrival, she felt as brittle and fragile as an eggshell, easily shattered, as she feared she would be if Michael did not return with Josh riding behind him. Beth? Blinking eyes that burned, she looked over at Robert as he hunkered down beside her. Yes? I have a boon to ask of you. He spoke in soft, carefully modulated tones, as if he too feared she would break down at the slightest provocation. But unlike the others, his kindness made her want to give in to the fear pressing down upon her, lean into him, and seek catharsis through tears. "What do you need?" she asked. "Might I borrow your blade for a moment?"
"My hunting knife?"
"Aye." "Sure." Her mind still on her missing brother, and the mystery of how she had come to be wherever the hell she was, Beth removed the large knife from its sheath and handed it over.
"My thanks, Beth."
Nodding, she returned her gaze to the hypnotic flames and listened intently for sounds that would herald Michael's approach. They did not come for another hour. When they did, Beth rose, stomach churning. Robert joined her, standing shoulder to shoulder with her, as though they were criminals in a courtroom awaiting a judge's sentence. Beth slipped her hand into his much larger one, needing the warm contact in that moment. His fingers curled around hers, and he drew her closer to his side. When Michael rode into the clearing, his only company, her bulky backpack alone, tears filled her eyes.
"Forgive me, mistress,"
he said, his handsome features full of regret.
"I did not find him."
Beth nodded, afraid that if she tried to speak just then, she would fall apart. When Robert tried to put his arm around her, she withdrew her hand and backed away. If he did anything to console her, showed her any kindness at all, it would be her undoing. The sobs trapped inside her would find their release, and once started, she feared they would never end.
"Beth."
Shaking her head, she turned on her heel and strode into the forest, not really knowing where she was going, just needing to get away, to find some time and privacy to compose herself. Chapter 5. Foliage closed above and behind Beth, erasing most of the moonlight. Darkness surrounded her, plucking at her shirt with wooden fingers and tripping her every other step. She probably should have stopped long enough to retrieve the flashlight from her backpack, but hadn't wanted to wait. If she had, she might have succumbed to temptation and burrowed into Robert's waiting arms, weeping loudly and using his already abused tunic for a tissue. She considered using the flashlight on her cell phone, but knew the battery was running low, and she wouldn't be able to use her solar charger until tomorrow. A narrow branch, thick with leaves, slapped her in the face. Beth swore softly. Just one more scratch to add to a host of others. Freaking thing stung, though. Pausing, she touched her cheek. Her fingers came away dry. Good, no blood. The sounds of the forest swelled around her. Owls, frogs, things she couldn't identify. Screeching things, scuttling things. Reaching back to touch the pocket that cradled her cell phone, Beth peered into the night as disquiet crept in. Where the hell was she, anyway? She hadn't meant to go so far, but could no longer see the light of the fire. A twig snapped behind her. Beth spun around and gasped as a large figure loomed over her. Bringing up her fists, she prepared to fight.
"Rest easy, Beth. 'Tis me."
"Robert!" Wilting with relief, she dropped her fists. "You were so quiet I didn't hear you come up behind me." His teeth flashed in a smile, though his eyes, what she could see of them in the darkness, remained watchful.
"'Tis a skill my brother taught me."
"Well, you're very good at it," she praised with a faint smile. "Don't do it again," he chuckled.
"As you wish."
He motioned to a large hump on his back.
"I thought you might need your things if you wished to bathe and refresh yourself."
He had brought her backpack? That was thoughtful of him. "Wait, did you say bathe?" she asked. "Where?"
Robert glanced at something over her shoulder.
"The river," a low voice said behind her. Beth jerked in surprise and spun around. Adam now stood behind her, holding her knife and a string of what appeared to be enough fish to feed them all for a week. Her mouth fell open.
"How did you do that?"
"Do what?"
"Sneak up behind her so silently and
catch so many fish?"
"With the hook and line tucked away in your blade." "'Twas why I asked if I might borrow it earlier,' Robert explained.
"'Oh!'
Her gaze went back and forth between the two warriors, and she truly was beginning to think of them in those terms now. "'You're not assuming I'm going to cook and clean those fish, are you?'
"'Nay,' Robert answered. "'My men will prepare them whilst we are away.'
"'Good, because I have no idea how to cook over an open flame, and cleaning and gutting a fish would be just too gross after the long day I've had.'
Another of those strange pauses followed her words. Robert nodded to Adam.
Return to camp. We shall join you shortly.
Aye, my lord.
Adam passed them and disappeared into the foliage. Robert settled a hand on Beth's lower back and guided her in the opposite direction.
You don't expect me to address you that way, do you? She asked, thinking of the way his men frequently addressed him.
Robert tilted his head to one side. Others will think it odd if you do not. A slow smile stole across his face. However, I find that I enjoy the sound of my name upon your lips.
Butterflies flitted about in Beth's stomach. Struggling to appear unaffected, she mustered a smile and nudged him with her shoulder.
Flirt?
I am not familiar with that word.
Yes, but you can probably guess its meaning, right?
He laughed.
Aye.
As they walked, he solicitously held branch after branch out of the way so she could pass unscathed. Were she a gambling woman, Beth would bet he was also the kind of man who stood whenever a woman entered the room. Not too many of those existed anymore. The trees and undergrowth parted in front of them, revealing a lovely river that sparkled like diamonds in the moonlight. It looked fairly deep at its center, the current swift and strong, but shallow and fairly calm along its banks. So they had been near a waterway.
Yes!
Racing forward, Beth dropped to her knees and plunged her hands into the water. She was already in the process of splashing it up onto her face when she became aware of its frigid temperature.
It's freezing! She gasped.
Behind her, Robert chuckled. I suspected you would think so. Beth stared down at the water in dismay. She would really love to wash off the itchy, grisly remainders of her violent confrontation with Kingsley and Vergoma, but if she bathed in that, she would be blue from the cold by the time she finished.
I don't care. I'm going to wash this crap off of me anyway.
Robert lowered her backpack to the ground, along with another pouch she had not noticed.
You will be chilled afterward. Have you fresh clothing to don?
Yes. Mark had recommended that she add a change of clothes while he had loaded it up for her. As Robert knelt beside her, Beth dug through the backpack and removed the flashlight.
Here, would you hold this for me so I can see what I'm doing?
Flicking the on switch, she handed the light to Robert. Gasping, he turned it toward himself. Beth held up a hand.
Don't!
Too late. Blinking quickly, he rubbed his eyes with his free hand. She sent him a wry smile.
Never mind. Just hold it like this.
Clasping his wrist, she adjusted the flashlight's angle until the bright beam fell onto her backpack, then released him. While Robert blinked to clear his vision, Beth rummaged through the pack, looking for all of the items she would need to get clean. A pair of rolled-up jeans, a black tank top, black bikini panties, white ankle socks, a bar of soap, and a tiny bottle of shampoo. Unfortunately, she had neither a towel to dry off with nor a clean bra to don underneath the tank top. The latter bothered her more than the first. She didn't relish the idea of sitting before a campfire with Robert and three men she still considered virtual strangers all staring at her nipples, which the cold breeze would no doubt make prominent.
"Is aught amiss?"
Robert asked, noting her frown.
"Nay, well, I don't have another bra, and the one I'm wearing is filthy."
Though Beth wasn't as fanatical about cleanliness as the fictional character Adrian Monk, she liked to be clean enough that her current state really nettled her. She watched his face, clearly visible now thanks to the flashlight.
He had that cute, slightly befuddled expression again, and she wondered if he was going to pretend he didn't know what a bra was.
"'Tis necessary, this bra?" he asked cautiously.
"Nay." Irritated by the blush she could feel climbing her cheeks, she spoke more sharply than she intended.
"Look, while I'm technically not shy, I'm not an exhibitionist either. My tank top isn't that thick, and I don't want your men to spend the rest of the night staring at my breasts."
His blue-eyed gaze dropped to her chest, then swiftly returned to meet hers. A teasing grin stretched his lips.
"I trust, however, you would not be averse to my staring at them?"
A burst of laughter escaped her, catching her by surprise. She wouldn't have thought anything could amuse her under the circumstances.
"Oh, shut up," she said, giving him a shove that landed him on his backside.
Deep, masculine laughter washed over her, warming her and easing some of her tension.
"Forgive me, Beth, I did but jest. My men are all honorable and will not behave disrespectfully toward you. If you lack sufficient clothing to make you comfortable, however, you are more than welcome to don my spare tunic, or you may wrap yourself in any of our cloaks and blankets. They are all at your disposal."
"Thank you, Robert." A smile lingering on his handsome face, he shone the light down on her pile of belongings.
"Have you any soap in there, or do you wish to use mine?"
His pack lay untouched where he had dropped it a couple of feet away.
"I have soap," she said, holding up the small bar of deodorant soap, "and shampoo."
Beth frowned down at the little bottle. "I hope this is enough to get all of the crud out of my hair." Her tangled brown locks were matted with dirt and dried blood and reached her waist when not braided. She might have to use the soap, too, to get it clean.
"May I?" Robert asked, holding out his hand.
Beth handed him the bottle and watched him study it under the light.
"You use this to clean your hair?"
"Yes." Turning slightly, he played the flashlight's beam across the riverbank until it landed upon a large, semi-flat rock that jutted out above the water a few yards away.
"That should do nicely."
"For what?"
Rising, his movements ever graceful and fluid, he tucked the shampoo into his fist beside the flashlight's handle and extended his hand to help her up.
"For washing your hair. If you lie on your back with your head resting on the edge, I can—"
"Robert, I am perfectly capable of washing my own hair."
He smiled down at her.
"You have been chilled for hours, Beth. If you remain in the water long enough to wash both your body and your hair, you will be half-frozen ere you emerge. I do not wish you to become ill."
He would have to echo her own thoughts, but she still couldn't let him wash her hair. The two of them were all alone out there, surrounded by darkness. And the city girl in her kept reminding her that, though he seemed like a very nice guy, she didn't know him from Adam.
"I'll just hang my head over the water and wash it myself."
He shook his head and pulled her along after him.
"Do not be stubborn. 'Twill be easier if I do it for you."
"You are the one who is being stubborn."
Stopping beside the rock, he stared down at her for a long moment.
"You have great difficulty trusting men, do you not?"
She shrugged.
"I have met very few men who were trustworthy.
Don't forget, I spend most of my time hunting down criminals, many of whom are men. Between dealing with them and knowing the statistics on sexual assault and infidelity in our society, I can't help but be cynical regarding your gender."
Raising their linked hands, he used them to tip her chin up, forcing her to meet his earnest gaze.
"You can trust me, Beth."
He spoke the words softly, his grave eyes almost hypnotizing. Her treacherous heart began to pound again.
"I would never intentionally harm you," he continued, "nor would I allow anyone else to do so. Were it necessary, I would give my life to protect you."
Beth stared up at him, astounded. "You mean that?" she whispered, seeing it in his eyes. She and Josh dealt with liars all the time,
Not just the bail skippers, but their family members, too, as well as friends and associates who lied to buy the criminals time and divert the search. After a while, truth became easy to identify, which was why confusion inundated Beth every time she worried and wondered if Robert and his friends had been involved in whatever twist had taken her away from Josh and brought her to this place, wherever they were. All of her instincts told her that Robert was exactly what he appeared to be, a really nice guy who only wanted to help her.
"I do mean it," he confirmed. "Will you allow me to wash your hair now?"
Too tired to continue fighting her intuition, she nodded. Robert removed his tunic and draped it over the rock. "It's going to get wet," she warned. He shrugged, his chainmail glinting in the moonlight. "It matters not." Taking her hand, he helped her recline on the rock. "I will not ask if 'tis comfortable, but is it at least tolerable?" Beth shifted around a bit until her spine no longer rested upon a ridge in the hard stone. "It's fine." Turning her head, she felt a jolt when she saw him removing his mailed shirt. "What are you doing?"
"I do not wish my armor to become wet and rust, although 'twould give my squire something more to do upon my return."
His mailed pants and his thick padded gambeson followed, leaving him in a soft shirt, trouser-like braise, and hose. Apparently medieval reenactors even wore authentic underwear. Beth watched him wade into the water. Much to her astonishment, he didn't even flinch. "The water is freezing. Won't you be too cold?" she asked, tilting her head back as he moved around and knelt behind her. The rock she lay upon only extended about a yard beyond the grassy bank, so the water did not quite reach his groin.
"I am accustomed to such."
Motioning for her to relax and stare up at the sky, he picked up her crusty braid and bent to examine it.
"Unlike most of my men, I prefer to bathe daily whenever water is available. When not at one of my own keeps or my brother's, I sometimes must resort to washing in whatever lake or stream is at hand, which is oft as cool or cooler than this one. And, too, I am reluctant to trouble the servants with carrying bucket after bucket of hot water up to my solar every night." Evidently, he had a brother who was into the whole dungeons and damsels thing, too.
"Beth?"
"Aye?"
"I cannot fathom how to remove the fastening at the end of your braid. There are no ribbons to untie, or—"
"It's elastic. Just pinch the hair above it and pull. It'll come right off."
"Will it not pain you, pulling your hair in such a fashion?"
"Nay, I do it all the time."
When he hesitated, she smiled. "Go ahead, Robert. It won't hurt, I promise." He must have been careful even so, because she did not feel even the faintest tug on her braid before his hand appeared above her, holding the dark brown elastic band.
"Thank you."
This was probably the only tie she had with her. Afraid of losing it, Beth wound it around the middle finger of her right hand like a ring and rested both hands on her stomach. Robert went to work on her hair, dunking the braid in the icy water, letting some of the dirt soften and rinse away before he gingerly began to untangle the long strands. When he cupped his hands and dribbled the first of many chilly drops on the hair at her temples and around her face, a shiver shook her, raising the hair on her arms.
"Wow, that is really cold,"
she rubbed her arms.
"I don't know how you can stand it."
One large hand smoothed the hair back from her face, gliding over the crown of her head.
"Mayhap you should postpone your bath until we reach Fosterley, and you can do so in warmth and comfort."
"I can't." Her stomach soured. "I don't want to wait that long. I need to wash the blood off."
"I understand."
Leaning away, he reached for the shampoo. Did he? She wondered. Did he know the fear and revulsion that filled her every time she glanced down at her stained clothing? Did he understand the terror that claimed her whenever she acknowledged that most, if not all, of the blood had drained from wounds on her own body? Wounds that should have killed her. wounds that, defying all comprehension, no longer existed. And did he sense the disgust that pummeled her when she admitted that some of the blood that coated her back could have sprayed from Vergoma when Josh had shot him with the Remington? Robert could sense unrest growing in Bethany. A crease formed between her brows. Her hands began to fidget and pluck at her clothing in restless movements. Twisting the top off the container of shampoo, he wondered what he could say that might ease her. He tipped the bottle sideways. A white, pearlescent liquid flowed into his cupped palm as a sweet aroma rose up to envelop him. "A most pleasant fragrance," he commented, bringing it closer to his nose for another sniff. "What is it?"
"I don't know. I've never used that one before. It was a free sample."
Setting the bottle aside, he began to work the strange liquid into her hair. Almost immediately, a thick white foam grew and spread throughout her long locks. "You are troubled," he observed. Her frown deepened. "You may confide in me, Beth. Whatever words pass between us will go no further." At least he hoped they would not. If she told Alyssa that he had teased her about her breasts, Robert feared he would find himself spending a night in his brother's dungeon. He still could not say what had come over him and made him speak so familiarly to her. Her throat worked with a swallow. "I'm just so worried about Josh." Her eyes shimmered as tears rose in them. "I keep seeing him, the way he looked when he staggered toward me, the blood on his clothes and the pain in his face, the fear for me in his eyes, how still he lay after he fell." Issuing a sound of impatience, she brought a hand up and rubbed the tears away. "And the sound he made when he saw me fall. I don't know how to describe it. He let out this roar of grief and fury, as if he knew I would die from my wounds." She shook her head. "Not knowing what happened to him is eating me up inside." Robert nodded. He had emitted such a roar himself the day he had watched his brother take 3 quarrels from a crossbow. Not knowing whether Dylan had survived or died from his wounds would have been unbearable. "You said you slew your attackers, did you not?" She nodded. Then there was still hope they would find Josh alive on the morrow. "I've never killed anyone before," she confessed, her voice low and strained, another burden for her to bear. "You were protecting yourself and your brother. You had no choice."
"I know. And I would do it again if I had to. I guess it's just now hitting me."
He nodded, his eyes on his hands as they sifted through the tangles. "Killing is never easy." While he had participated in numerous skirmishes, Robert had not engaged in his first major battle until his last year under Lord Edmund's tutelage. He had fought as he had been trained to fight, coolly and without emotion, spilling the blood of one opponent after another until no more had been left standing. The knights around him had heaped praise upon him as he had withdrawn his sword from the last man he had felled, praise to which he had paid no heed. The scent of blood and death saturating the air around him, Robert had slipped away from the others and, out of sight and out of hearing, promptly lost the contents of his stomach in the brush. It had been the first time he had taken another man's life, and it had disturbed him far more than he had expected it to, considering he would have lost his own life had he not done so. That night, instead of celebrating the victory with the other warriors and boasting of his kills to any and all who would listen, Robert had sought solace in Eleanor's arms. Only she had seemed to understand. Leaning closer to Bethany, he massaged the fragrant soap into her scalp and tried in vain to remember what magical words Eleanor had imparted so long ago to banish his turmoil. Beth's chin rose skyward as she looked up at him. "Are you just trying to make me feel better? Or are you speaking from experience?"
"Experience."
He moved around to her side so she would not have to strain to see him while he continued to work the lather through the hair at her temples.
"You've
killed someone then?" she asked, her tone cautious. "More men than I care to admit." He could see his words shook her and forced a casual shrug. "War cannot always be avoided." He shook his head. "At times it seems constant, so often is it waged, warranted, or nay. I choose my battles as I can, fulfilling my duty to my country and ensuring the safety of my family. Yet even in the most minor of skirmishes, there are casualties. I have been one myself a time or two." When she didn't cringe away from him, he relaxed. He had thought for a moment that she might turn away from him, or again begin to fear him. "If you will slide a bit more toward the edge, I shall rinse your hair for you now." Rising up on her elbows, she inched backward until her head hung completely off the edge. Robert slid one hand beneath her mass of soapy hair and cupped her head for support. The other he combed through her dark locks, letting the current sweep the soap away. When the last pale bubble had abandoned them, he gathered the gleaming strands together and gently twisted, as he had seen Eleanor do, to wring out the excess water. "Thank you." Reaching back, Bethany liberated the thick bunch from him and sat up. Rising, he left the cool water and stepped up onto the bank, where he proceeded to remove his shirt.
"Hey, what are you doing?" Bethany blurted. "Just because I let you wash my hair doesn't mean I want to play I'll show you mine if you'll show me yours."
A burst of laughter escaped him, startling him more than it did her. Her eyes narrowed.
"Forgive me, Beth."
It took tremendous effort to choke back his amusement and reduce his smile to a mere twitch of the lips. "While I admit such a game sounds intriguing," he raised his eyebrows and gave her his most charming grin, sparking a small smile of her own, "'twas not my intention to engage in it now. I merely thought to have a quick wash, since my garments are already wet and soap and water are both available."
"Oh."
She twisted her hair to squeeze more water out of it.
"So where should I bathe, then?"
"Here. I shall turn my back."
"I can't bathe with you here," she protested.
"I will not watch you, Beth," he informed her patiently.
Though the temptation would be great, he felt confident he could resist it.
"Then go wait for me at the campsite. I can find my way back."
"I cannot leave you unprotected."
"Have you forgotten this?"
Reaching down to her ankle, she removed the smallest of her weapons from her boot.
"I have my 22. I'll be perfectly safe."
He eyed the silvery object doubtfully, unsure exactly what such a weapon did.
"You are not familiar with these woods, and know neither the dangers they possess nor how swiftly they can come upon you. I will not leave you alone."
Her expression darkened with a mixture of frustration and dismay. He loosed a heavy sigh.
"I am here to protect you, Beth, not ravish you. Had the latter been my intention, I would have already done so. I vow I have never taken a woman by force in my life."
A flush mounted her cheeks. "I have already told you I will turn my back. If 'twill make you feel better, then leave your undergarments on, though I assure you such is not necessary." A moment passed.
"Fine," she grumbled, scooting off the rock and stepping onto the grassy bank.
"I guess it's nothing you haven't seen before anyway. Just don't take this as an invitation."
"As you wish."
Robert learned something new about her then, when Bethany decided to place her trust in someone. She gave her full trust. After placing her 22 on the ground a few feet from the water's edge, she proceeded to disrobe without even asking him to give her his back. She discarded her boots and odd, thick, ankle-high white hose first. Then she parted her long-sleeved tunic down the middle and shrugged out of it. He stepped forward and extended one hand. A question in her gaze, Bethany handed him the jacket, he thought she called it.
"I thought to wash it for you whilst you bathe."
Her eyes narrowed.
"Are you sure you're real?"
"I do not understand."
Shaking her head, she lowered her hands to the sides of her odd vest. "You're too good to be true, Robert.
First you say you would give your life to protect me, rip. Then you kneel in icy water and wash my hair, rip. And now you're offering to wash my filthy clothes for me, rip, rip. She lifted the vest over her head. No man is that nice. Tossing it aside, she reached for her belt. A few nimble pulls, and it joined her vest at her feet. Robert stood rooted to the spot, his mouth dry, breath quickening, as she tucked her fingers beneath the hem of her tiny sleeveless tunic, then dragged it up and over her head. Heat seared him, racing through his veins and pooling in his groin. Was that a bra? Those two tiny scraps of sleek black fabric that cupped her full breasts the way his hands itched to, barely covering the pale pink crests and held in place by the thin black straps whose purpose had eluded him earlier. More plump, pale flesh than he had anticipated rose above the edges, the shadowed valley between them drawing his hungry gaze. Despite the fact that almost every inch of her skin was coated with dried blood, Robert found himself consumed with lust, the likes of which he had not experienced in years. "Mayhap I am not as honorable as you think I am," he admitted hoarsely. Unconcerned, she handed him the sleeveless tunic, then started unfastening the front of her breeches. "Mayhap I only offered to wash your garments in hopes of distracting myself from," his gaze returned to her breasts, "other things." Her eyes met his, then slid away. "Oh," he thought her cheeks darkened a bit. "Well, just pretend we're at the beach and this is a bathing suit," she mumbled, tucking her thumbs in the waistband of her breeches. "You make a habit of walking along the shore garbed so—" "By the saints!" he practically bellowed. Bethany jumped. "What?" Eyes wide with alarm, she scanned their surroundings. Try though he might, Robert could not look away. He knew he should, but he could not. Nor could he pick his jaw up from where it had landed on the ground. All he could do was stand and stare and go up in flames. Bethany's breeches now lay bunched around her ankles, leaving her long, slender legs and almost everything else bare. The only thing that shielded her modesty was a V-shaped piece of shiny black material that formed a triangle at the juncture of her thighs and narrowed to two thin strips that disappeared over her hips. "Robert?" For a moment, he thought he would not succeed in dragging his gaze away. How those black scraps tempted him, beckoning him to abandon all honor and let his hands and mouth go exploring. "Robert, you're starting to make me a little nervous." He imagined so, slavering over her the way he was, like a wolf wishing to dine on a ewe. "Not to mention self-conscious," she added. At last he managed to close his mouth, clearing his throat. He tried to remember what he had been saying. "You wander along the shores, garbed so sparsely?" She glanced down and stepped out of the breeches. "Actually, no. I sunburn too easily. But I've seen women at the beach who wore less." "Less than that?" he asked incredulously. Her brow crinkled slightly. "Aye, lots of times, especially during spring break." He didn't know what spring break was, but surely she jested. "Are you all right?" she asked, eyeing him dubiously. All right? Nay, he was not all right. He trembled with need. He was on fire. He was a breath away from losing both his control and his sanity, and she seemed completely oblivious to the effect her near nudity had on him. Robert bent to scoop up her breeches and froze. "Your feet! What about them? Why did you not tell me they were injured?" Dropping the bundle of clothes he held, he knelt and reached for her left foot. "They aren't. What are you—"
She rested one of her hands on his shoulder as he carefully placed her cool foot on his bent knee and stared at her toes in dismay. She had shown no sign of injury, no limp or other evidence, so he had not thought to ask. Swearing silently, Robert berated himself for letting her walk from the campsite when he obviously should have carried her. "Oh," she said, understanding, lightening her voice. "Robert, that's not blood. That's nail polish." Robert squinted down at the red that coated her toes and realized that it only covered the short, perfectly shaped nails at their tips.
"Nail polish?"
"Yes. I don't paint my fingernails very often. I have to keep them short because I spend so much time at the computer. And with all of the criminals and quote-unquote good old boys I have to deal with, I've found that it's best not to add too many feminine frills to my appearance. So I paint my toenails instead." This time, Robert failed to decipher most of her words, apart from her admission that she painted her toenails. What a peculiar practice. He drew one finger across the nail of her big toe. Smooth, shiny, and oh so red. Peculiar indeed. Yet he could not deny that it looked quite appealing next to her alabaster skin. Again he frowned. That alabaster skin was as icy as the river water. Sliding his hand across the top of her foot and around her narrow ankle in an attempt to infuse some warmth into her, Robert made a second, even more astonishing discovery.
"Beth, you have no hair on your leg."
"I know. I just shaved."
"You shaved the hair off your leg? For what purpose? Had she been ill? Was she recovering from some fever as well as the attack she had suffered?"
"Legs, plural. And I did it for the usual reasons." If suppressing the need to touch her had been difficult before, it now proved impossible. He had to know what those smooth, sensuously curved limbs felt like. Still holding her foot pressed against his thigh, Robert ran one hand up her calf, caressing his way to the back of her knee, around and down the front. So soft and tempting. His heart thudded against his ribs.
"What reasons might those be?"
he asked hoarsely, repeating his slow foray up and down her leg, wishing he dared venture higher. Goose flesh appeared in the wake of his touch, and he felt a shiver rock her. Was it spawned by cold or by desire?
Because like most women in our society," she began, voice quieter, "I've been conditioned by men and the media to believe that, on a woman, hairy legs are ugly."
The faint huskiness that entered her voice made his blood sing. But ere he could inch his hand up farther, eager to reach that shiny black triangle and really make her breath catch, his damnable honor resurfaced. Was he not the one who had elicited her trust by assuring her he would not look and had no intentions of touching? Swearing silently, he dropped her foot, collected her wadded-up garments, and rose. He would have turned and, without another word, walked straight into the icy water to cool his raging ardor had she not stopped him.
"Wait!"
His pulse skipped, thrumming through his veins as he halted. Would she call him back? Invite more caresses? Tell him it had been his touch rather than the cold air or her wet hair that had made her shiver.
"I?"
"On second thought," she said, "you better not wash my clothes. The police might need them for DNA evidence." He sighed. It must have been the cold. Dropping the shirts, without asking what police or DNA meant, he strode into the frigid water without removing his brays and hose.
"You forgot the soap," she called after him. "You may toss it to me when you are finished with it."
Under his breath, he muttered, "I have a feeling I will be here a while." Thankfully, Bethany finished her bath in short order. Keeping his back turned, Robert pushed aside thoughts of her enticing body and what every splash and gasp that sounded behind him signified. He forced himself, instead, to think of other things, like whether or not the men who had attacked Bethany and her brother were part of the marauders who had been wreaking havoc upon his lands. For months now, he had traveled from one estate to another, attempting to capture them, always arriving a day or a sennight too late. There had been no deaths thus far, but crops and huts had been burned, cattle had been stolen or slain. Who were the bastards responsible? Why did they target him and his people? Robert and his men had just returned from parleying with his nearest neighbors. None had suffered the slaughtered cattle, burned huts, or terrorized serfs that he had. All were on good terms with him and had offered to aid him by sending out patrols to ensure the malefactors did not access his lands by crossing their own. 'Twas not enough, though. He wanted to capture the blackguards and have done with it. Robert's anger, and the glacial temperature of the water that buffeted his body, at last succeeded in dampening his ardor, until Bethany spoke behind him. "Here's the soap." Staring at the opposite bank as though it held the answers to all of life's mysteries, he reached behind him and felt the block of soap drop into his hand. Hard, like a stone, with streaks of varying hues of green crisscrossing it like veins in marble, it, too, puzzled him. Vigorous splashing heralded her exit. "Would you mind if I used your tunic to dry off?" she asked. He looked without thinking and nearly lost his hold on the soap. All of his heedful concentration had been for naught. His overly chilled body defied the laws of nature and instantly turned hot and hard. If he had thought Bethany pretty before, she was no less than stunningly beautiful now. Moonlight bathed her pale, clean skin, so much more exposed now that the blood and dirt had been washed away, bestowing silvery highlights upon it and accentuating shadows and hollows that begged to be explored. Standing there, shivering, her knees clenched together to preserve warmth, her arms crossed tightly beneath her breasts, plumping them up for his ravenous inspection, her hair straggling down over one shoulder, she looked utterly irresistible. "The tunic?" she prodded, her teeth chattering audibly. He blinked.
"Of course, you are welcome to it. There is another in my pouch that you may don for warmth."
"Thank you. Now turn back around and don't look until I tell you to. I don't want you to see me naked."
Doing as she bid him, he bit back a groan. Mayhap he should send her back to camp alone, after all. That might be the only way he could walk out of the water without embarrassing them both. Chapter 6 Robert took so long to bathe that Beth began to wonder if he weren't part seal. Seated on a cold stone, she didn't know how he could stand the icy temperatures. Even covered in his dark tunic, which fell to the knees on him but reached her feet, she still shook like a leaf in high winds. "You're going to get hypothermia if you don't come out of there soon," she cautioned, squeezing water out of the brays and hose he had tossed onto the bank. Like him, she had failed in her resolve not to peek, and wow, he had a magnificent body. Granted, she could only see him from the waist up, but his face and torso alone were enough to heat the blood in her veins. Broad shoulders that looked strong enough to carry any burden, well-developed pecs, rippling washboard abs, biceps that bulged with muscle. Put those together with his handsome face, which now glistened with moisture in the flashlight's beam, and he was absolutely beautiful.
"You're turning blue," she called, striving to sound normal.
"I shall come out now," he announced. More reluctant than she cared to admit, Beth turned her back. Water splashed and clothing rustled as he emerged from the river and rubbed himself dry. "Well, at least I'm feeling warmer," she thought, then cursed her vivid imagination as her mind conjured tantalizing images to match every sound that reached her ears. His hand abruptly appeared before her.
"Shall we go?"
Startled, she glanced up. He had hidden all of that lovely muscle beneath the fresh shirt and braids she had seen in his pouch, along with his boots. Both his pack and hers hung from one shoulder. His armor and their damp clothes dangled over his arm. "Beth," he prodded.
"Yeah?"
"Shall we go?" he repeated.
"Oh, aye."
Placing her hand in his chilly one, she stood, took two steps, and tripped on the hem of his tunic. Fortunately, Robert caught her before she hit the ground. Beth shook her head at her own clumsiness and braced one hand against his chest.
"Thanks, I..."
Her eyes widened with alarm.
"Holy crap, you're cold!"
She pressed her other hand to his chest, felt the arctic temperature of his skin, the tremors that shook him, and panicked.
"Robert, you're freezing!"
He was the one enabling her to keep her sanity. She sure as hell didn't want him to die of hypothermia. Throwing her arms around him, she lowered her face to his chest, pressed her body against his, and began to vigorously rub his back, hoping to lend him a little warmth. He stiffened.
"I am well, Beth," he objected. "Nay, you're not. You're an icicle. Here, let me warm your arms."
She latched on to one of his arms and began to chafe it with both hands.
Sheesh, his muscles were huge. "Here, take your tunic back. I don't need it anymore. I'm warm now," she lied.
He grabbed her hands before she could remove the long garment and offered a frozen chuckle.
"You are barely warmer than I, Beth. Let us hie ourselves back to the clearing where a blazing fire awaits us. 'Tis not far."
A fire sounded wonderful.
"Okay, but let's hurry."
Linking the fingers of one hand through his, she chafed his arm with the other as he led her back to camp. When the two of them stepped from the trees, relief filled her. A sizable flame roared and crackled in the center of the campsite. Michael, Stephen, and Adam glanced up from their positions around it, looked back down, then all did double takes. Beth frowned.
"What?"
She looked behind her and saw nothing but trees. Were they looking at her? Had she missed some of the blood on her face or something? Reaching up, she ran her free hand over her features, but found only clean skin. So, what had captured their attention? After gaping at her like the fish they presently roasted over the fire, the men directed their gazes to her hand clasped in Robert's, then looked up at their leader. Robert's fingers tightened around hers. Almost as one, the men looked away. Beth glanced up and caught the tail end of a glare Robert sent them. Was he angry? Why? Offering no explanation, he guided her over to the side of the fire opposite the others and invited her to sit upon a folded blanket Michael produced for her comfort. Very thoughtful. The temperature felt like it hovered somewhere around 60 degrees and was steadily dropping. This time of year in Houston, temperatures usually didn't even fall out of the 80s at night. Yet now it was cool enough for her butt to go numb if she sat on the bare ground. She frowned as Robert handed her another blanket. She wasn't really in Pennsylvania, was she? The others seemed neither surprised nor affected by the chill. Maybe that thick, padded gambeson thing Robert had worn under his mail kept them cozy warm. Since Robert no longer wore his own, Beth unfolded the blanket so they could share it. Crossing her legs beneath the somewhat coarse material, she patted the makeshift cushion at her side. Robert draped two more blankets around her shoulders, then obliged her by seating himself close enough that their shoulders brushed.
"There's plenty of blanket," she said. "Why don't we share?"
"'Tis not necessary," he protested.
"Aye, it is. Look at us."
Opening her arms, she drew half of the blankets around him. "We're both shivering." As added incentive, she stopped clenching her teeth and let them chatter at will. Across from them, Stephen muttered something about it not being the cool air that made Robert shiver, earning another dark look. Robert, nevertheless, cocooned himself within the blankets with her and lent her his warmth as his own chill deserted him.
"Mayhap your brother will see our fire and be drawn to it," he suggested softly.
Thankful for that bit of hope, she nodded.
I hope so.
The rest of the evening passed as pleasantly as it could, with dozens of unanswered questions swirling through Beth's brain and concern for Josh constantly prodding her. The fish ended up being rather tasty. In true warrior fashion, her four male companions wolfed down their share in less than 5 minutes, then set about attempting to assemble her tent while she slowly ate her fill. "Why don't you just read the instructions?" she asked at one point, motioning to the single sheet of paper they had set aside.
"We need no instructions,"
Stephen muttered now, frowning over the way the slim metal rod in his hands bent.
"This metal is of very poor quality."
Beth rolled her eyes. "It's supposed to bend. The tent is dome-shaped."
"The cloth is flimsy as well," Michael added. "'Tis thinner than parchment."
"It's waterproof. It's windproof. It's fine," she countered. The only one who didn't grumble was Adam, whom she had already identified as the quiet one of the group. He merely nodded his agreement with the others' complaints and scowled his frustration when nothing they tried seemed to work. Beth glanced over at Robert, who also neglected to consult the instructions, and caught him staring at her across the fire. Rising, he abandoned the tent and the others and came to sit beside her once more.
"Giving up?" she asked. He shook his head. "I find your company more pleasing than theirs."
"I heard that,"
Stephen groused, tossing the metal rod down and picking up another. She smiled. "What is it with men and their refusal to read instructions? It's almost as bad as their insistence on not stopping to ask for directions when they get lost."
"I cannot speak to the latter, but with regards to the first, I am the only one here who can read with any proficiency."
She raised her eyebrows.
"Seriously?"
He nodded. "Michael can read a little. Lord Edmund, the man Michael and I fostered with, insisted that our training include learning to scribe. Alas, Michael was often ill and was not made to suffer through as many of the tiresome lessons as I was." He sounded for all the world as if he had really had such a medieval upbringing, as if he had been a page, then become a squire, and then the knight he was now.
"And the other two?" she asked.
He shrugged. "The knights who trained them had little use for such abilities." She couldn't hide her shock. "'Tis not uncommon, Beth."
"I know, but didn't they go to school?"
"Unless a boy either plans to enter the church or possess estates he must oversee, he has little need for numbers or letters." She studied him, trying to convince herself that this was simply his medieval reenactment group way of saying they had slipped through the cracks, that both the educational system and their parents had failed them. But he really didn't seem to be acting. Her instincts kept telling her he was sincere.
"You have great instincts, Beth," Josh had told her many times. "Trust them. They've never failed you."
She glanced at the men across the campfire, then returned her gaze to Robert. Had she inadvertently guessed correctly in her mental ramblings earlier? Were these guys mentally off? Did they actually believe they were medieval knights, guided by a code of honor? There were worse delusions someone could have, she supposed. "Haven't you ever heard the saying, 'Knowledge is power?'" she queried.
"Nay."
He studied her thoughtfully. "However, I have often found such to be true."
"Me too."
Was that admiration in his gaze? "So, if you're the only one who can read, why aren't you over there reading the instructions to them?" He hesitated.
"They displeased me earlier."
"What did they do? Take the fish you wanted?" He looked away.
"'Twould not interest you."
"I wouldn't have asked if I wasn't interested." A twinge of what looked to be chagrin rippled across his handsome features.
"I did not care for the way they looked at you," he admitted.
"What do you mean? When we came back from our bath?"
Bad choice of words. Beth flushed as soon as they left her mouth. His blue eyes twinkled with amusement as he gazed down at her. When we returned from our bath."
Beth elbowed him lightly in the ribs for teasing her.
I looked like a drowned rat. You can't blame them for thinking it when they saw me.
A different spark entered his eyes then.
Verily, if that is what you believe, I wish I had a looking-glass, so that I might show you what I see.
She laughed ruefully. I don't need a mirror, thank you, and would only grimace if I had one. I'm not wearing any makeup. I have scratches all over my face from racing pell-mell through the forest, and even though I found a comb in my backpack, I know my hair. If I don't use tons of mousse and spend half an hour blow-drying it straight, it kinks up as if it's been freshly permed.
To demonstrate, she reached up, tugged on a ringlet until it straightened, then let it bounce back into place. He frowned.
You have beautiful hair. Why would you wish to straighten it?
Because straight is in. Straight is sleek. Straight is sexy. Straight is sophisticated.
She wrinkled her nose. Curly is cute. He fingered one of the thick curls that rested upon her shoulder.
You truly dislike your hair.
He sounded as if he couldn't believe it. Her pulse picked up.
Yes.
'Tis soft, he murmured, his voice deep and hushed and radiant. See how it captures the light of the fire.
Her throat closed up, silencing any self-derisive protest she might have made. As she watched, mesmerized, the brown lock twined itself around his long, tanned finger like the limbs of a lover.
It coils itself around me, caressing me, and making me your willing prisoner.
Seizing a larger section of hair, enough to fill his calloused palm, he brought it to his face, closed his eyes, and inhaled deeply.
And so fragrant, the perfume of some flower I cannot name, mayhap one of those that defies winter itself and blooms ere spring is even full upon us.
Sighing, he returned the curls to her shoulder as if he had not just enthralled her with his words.
Beth stared at him.
Who are you? She wanted to ask, her heart thudding loudly in her breast. And are you really the man you appear to be? Her gaze fell to his lips, the kind I would just about beg to have wrap his arms around me and kiss me.
Beth? She blinked.
Where had that thought come from?
What?
Oh!
Had he asked her a question while she had been mentally drooling over him?
I think I'd better go show the guys how to put my tent together. I'm about ready to call it a night.
Shrugging out of the blankets, she stood, lifted the hem of his tunic so she wouldn't trip again, and practically ran to the other side of the fire.
One day. She had known Robert for one tumultuous day. Half a day, really, if that much. All things considered, she couldn't possibly be falling for him.
Could she? Hours later, Beth curled up beneath the pile of blankets the men had all volunteered and tried to sleep within the dubious safety of her tent. Once she had retrieved the instructions and began barking out orders, the men had swiftly erected the small structure. Then they had once more behaved as though they had never seen such a thing, and had all insisted upon crawling around inside it, inspecting it. The tent was small, about 6 feet by 5 feet, with a domed ceiling and two arched windows. Each window was comprised of mosquito netting on the outside and nylon, or at least it felt like nylon, on the inside that could be unzippered to let a breeze through. Of course, all four men had been eager to zip and unzip them. It was a wonder she had been able to make them pause long enough to remove their boots so they wouldn't track in too much dirt before they clambered around inside. Beth just couldn't get over their childlike fascination with zippers and Velcro and the rest of her belongings. It was annoying, amusing, and confusing all at once because, again, the more time she spent with them, the more she began to believe they weren't faking it. A breeze rattled the tent. Shivering, despite the protection of its walls, she burrowed deeper under the blankets. It just didn't make any sense.
not where she was, whom she was with, or even the fact that she had lived through that violent confrontation with Kingsley and Vergoma. Had Josh survived, too? She could only pray that he had, and that tomorrow would bring her the answers she so desperately needed. Her limbs trembling from the unseasonable cold, Beth sighed and gradually let the world around her fade away.
Bethany.
Hmm?
Beth, someone whispered.
Answer the door, Josh, she grumbled, snuggling deeper into the blankets. Hadn't he heard the doorbell?
Beth, the deep voice called again, this time laced with amusement. Sleep receded. Her eyes flew open.
What?
Shoving disordered curls out of her face, Beth rolled onto her stomach, propped herself up on her elbows, and reached out to unzip the window in front of her. The nylon fell away, revealing Robert, propped on his elbows just on the other side. Golden light from the fire lit half of his handsome face and left the other half in darkness. She glanced over his shoulder. The other three warriors appeared to be sleeping soundly.
"What is it?" she whispered. "Did you hear something?"
He nodded. "You were talking in your sleep. I feared you might be..."
"I talk in my sleep?" she interrupted, surprised.
"Aye."
"Really?"
"Aye." She'd had no idea. But then, how would she? She had never had a lover who would tell her that she did, or that she hogged the covers, or...
"I don't snore, too, do I?"
His lips twitched.
"Like a warrior."
"I do?"
she squeaked. He laughed.
"Nay, Beth, I jest. But you do talk in your sleep."
Scowling, she thumped the netting in front of his nose, barely missing it.
"What did I say?"
Hopefully nothing embarrassing. "Much that I could not comprehend. At the last, when I called your name, you thought me Josh and bid me answer the door."
"Hmm.
I feared you might be trapped in a nightmare and sought to wake you ere it became too violent," he told her.
"Oh."
A moment's thought failed to reveal whatever she had been dreaming. A brisk wind wound its way through the window, inspiring a shiver. "You tremble," he murmured.
"Yeah. It's cold, isn't it?"
"Secure your window against the breeze, and I shall leave you to your rest."
"Okay."
She reached for the zipper.
"And Robert?"
He stopped in the process of lying down again.
"Aye."
"Thank you."
He offered her a tender smile.
"Sleep well, Beth."
She tried to. Sleep well, that was. But she couldn't. Not because of nightmares. The temperature kept her awake. It was even colder now than it had been when she had turned in. The ground beneath the tent radiated an almost wintry chill that seeped through the thin material and settled in her bones. She wished she had a nice warm sleeping bag. Beth tucked one of the blankets beneath her, using it as a bed of sorts, but it didn't make much difference other than to leave the rest of her colder. Tossing and turning, chafing her arms and legs, Beth's frustration mounted. This was ridiculous. It was August. She should be sweating. Where the hell was she? She blew on her fingers. And what the hell did she have to do to get warm already? Sitting up, muttering several curses, she folded each of the three blankets that covered her in half, then stacked them one atop the other. She may have to sleep in a fetal position beneath them, but maybe six layers would finally insulate her well enough to sleep. Beth flounced back down, curled up into a little ball, and tucked the folded blankets around her, pulling them over her head. They were a little itchy and smelled like horse. Who cared? At least they were warm. Or they would be. Given time? Yup. The warmth would kick in any minute now.
Damn it, it's not working. How did those guys stand it out there?
They all either slept on the ground or leaned against a tree, exposed to the wind with nothing but their cloaks for protection. Movement sounded outside the tent, distracting her. She jumped when the zipper at the tent's entrance began to unzip itself. Struggling to unbury her head, she peered over the edge of the bunched-up covers.
Robert? As the man himself ducked inside and resealed the tense entrance behind him, she propped herself up on her elbows. What had already been a small space now seemed positively Lilliputian.
"What's wrong?"
she whispered as he turned to face her, crouched down on his haunches to avoid scraping his head on the top of the tent. He smiled.
"Your muttering and chattering teeth are keeping me awake."
"I'm sorry, I didn't even realize I was doing it." Robert waved away her apology, then motioned for her to scoot over.
"Move over a bit. We will have to sleep with our heads in one corner and our feet in the other if we are going to do this. Otherwise, I will not fit."
"I beg your pardon?"
He grinned at the challenge in her tone. "Do not question my honor again. I only wish to offer you the heat of my body, not more."
"Oh." It seemed downright intimate as she scooted over to make room for him beside her.
"So, we're just going to sleep, right?"
Best to put it right out there and make doubly sure.
"Aye."
Robert was a big man and took up a lot of room as he stretched out as much as the tent would allow him. His arm pressed against hers, their hips and thighs touched. Taking the blankets from her, he unfolded and shook them out to settle over their bodies.
Ooh, and he was warm, too. So wonderfully, deliciously warm.
She didn't even wait for him to finish getting comfortable before she eagerly turned toward him and tucked her frosty toes between his calves. He hissed in a sharp breath as the cold penetrated the thin material that covered his legs. Beth felt a shudder ripple through him and laughed.
"That's nothing. Wait until you feel my hands."
He groaned.
"You had best give them to me now and get it over with."
She gratefully thrust her icy digits at him, sighing with pleasure as his warm fingers closed around them and carried them to his mouth to be bathed in warm breath.
"Saints, woman, your dip in the river did not leave you ill, did it?"
Freeing one hand, he pressed his palm to her forehead in search of aberrant heat.
"I might ask the same of you. You're so warm. You aren't running a fever, are you?"
"Nay." The backs of his fingers touched her cheek, then her neck, before leaving.
"You do not feel overly warm," he murmured doubtfully.
"I'm fine. I'm just not used to this kind of weather." He grunted.
"In truth, I do not find it unseasonably cool."
"Well, you must have been born in Alaska or something."
"Nay, I was born at Westcote."
"Oh, where is that?"
Maybe that would give her a clue as to where she was.
A lengthy pause ensued, during which he stopped blowing on her hands.
"You have never heard of Westcote?"
His tone suggested she should have.
"Nay."
"Lord Dillon, Earl of Westcote." Was he another medieval reenactment friend of Robert's?
"Nay."
"Feared throughout the land for his ferocity?"
"Not by me."
"Wed to a sorceress?"
"Good for him, but nay."
"Lionheart's fiercest champion?"
He prodded almost desperately. "Who is Lionheart?"
He sucked in his breath.
"Do you jest with me, Beth?"
He sounded very serious all of a sudden. Frowning, she tried to see him, a shadow among shadows, more clearly.
"Nay, why?"
He offered no answer, as though he were too appalled to think of one.
"Should I know him?" she asked tentatively.
"Or is it an it? Is Lionheart the name of a charity or a rock group or something?" His thumbs began to stroke her hands in tandem.
"Nay, Beth."
"Then who..." She lost her train of thought when she felt his lips touch her knuckles.
"We shall discuss this on the morrow."
She wished he would discuss it now. He sounded shaken. Indeed, there was an odd texture to his voice, indicating sadness, concern, something weighty she soon forgot entirely when he released her hands and urged her to roll away from him and onto her side. Before she had a chance to feel disappointed, he curled his large body around hers, his chest warming her back, his hips cupping her bottom, the fronts of his thighs cushioning the backs of her own. He slipped one of his thick biceps beneath her head to form a surprisingly comfortable pillow, The other arm he looped around her, capturing both of her hands in his and nestling them against her chest just above her breasts. His gentle touch and presence both warmed and soothed her. Well, part of her was soothed. The other part had trouble catching her breath and was, in fact, trying unsuccessfully to calm her racing pulse as a different kind of heat pooled low in her belly, especially when she became aware of the obvious evidence of his arousal trapped between them. Robert? Ignore it. Despite the increased beat of his heart against her back, he sounded completely unaffected. But you are a beautiful woman, Beth. I cannot help my body's natural response to your nearness, but I will not betray your trust by acting upon it. Oh. Beth winced, silently cursing herself for sounding disappointed. Do you want me to move away? His arm tightened around her. Nay, you are perfect where you are. Relaxing into his embrace, she waited for sleep to come. Instead of dreams, however, doubts returned to plague her. Robert, she whispered after some time had passed. Would you think less of me if I told you I was afraid? He stiffened. Of me? Nay, though the city girl in her still thought she should be. His muscles relaxing, he settled against her once more. Then what? What frightens you? She bit her lip. I think something is wrong. I think something is very, very wrong. I think I'm far away from where I should be, and I don't know how I came to be here. A sigh wafted across her shoulder as he nuzzled his face into her hair, inspiring a sensual shiver. All will be well, Beth. I will help you find your brother and the answers you seek. Just hearing those words helped her. Thank you. He gave her a little squeeze. Try to sleep. Too weary to argue, she closed her eyes. Wide awake, Robert lay motionless. His heat gradually suffused Bethany, stilling her shivers and drawing a sigh from her lips as she slipped into slumber. 'Twould be a long night, he thought, closing his eyes and willing his body not to respond when she snuggled her shapely bottom into his groin. Unfortunately, his body had a will of its own. He had been so long without a woman that even a gentle breeze could make his manhood stand at attention. His brother Dylan would be shocked, convinced that Robert very cheerfully spent each night in a different woman's bed. In truth, Robert had been celibate for months, and this would be the first night he had actually slept beside a woman since Eleanor. He could not decide how he felt about that. He experienced some guilt, of course, not because he was sleeping with a woman. Aside from his body's involuntary response, there was nothing sexual about their embrace. He simply wished to warm her and comfort her. But it felt so damned good just to lie there with Bethany's fragile body nestled trustingly against his own, her breath a soothing whisper. He had almost forgotten what moments like this could be like. One of the horses nickered softly. The fire beyond the tent continued to crackle and snap, whilst insects and occasional larger beasts voiced their accompaniment. Robert sighed, his breath ruffling Beth's hair. His thoughts and his body's rampaging response would no doubt keep him far from sleep this night. Concern would as well. How could Beth have failed to hear tales of Dylan and Alyssa? Plentiful stories of the couple circulated the country and were carried as far away as the Holy Land. Even the damned minstrels sang of them, feeding the fear the two inspired. And how could she not know of King Richard? He had only been dead for 4 years, succeeded by his treacherous brother John. Was she simply unaware that some had begun to refer to King Richard as Lionheart, giving testament to his bravery and ferocity in battle? Aye, mayhap that was it. He frowned and closed his eyes. At least he hoped that was it. His friend's suggestion that she was mad
followed him into troubled dreams.
Chapter 7. Waking up with Robert's large, warm hand kneading her breast should have warned Beth that the day would not go as planned. Of course, none of the surprises that followed were as pleasant as that one.
Whew! What a way to wake up! All warm and tingly and snuggled up against a man's strong, muscular, very aroused body. It was a first for her, and one she hated to see end, which it did as soon as Robert woke up and realized he had been fondling her in his sleep, swiftly apologizing in a voice gravelly with slumber and no little desire. He rolled away from her, rose, and left the tent. The other men didn't tease her or make any sly remarks about Robert's having spent the night with her, though she had expected them to. For whatever reason, some men tended to be juvenile about such things. Instead, they seemed to be on their best behavior. They didn't jump on her as soon as she opened her backpack. They didn't pester her about her possessions. They didn't fight over who got to dismantle and put away her tent. And they developed the most peculiar habit of addressing her as "My Lady." "Are you warm enough, my lady? Will you take my cloak, my lady? Shall we stop for a rest, my lady?" It was all very odd. And the surprises kept coming, each more disturbing than the last. They returned to the road she and Robert had traveled the previous day, the narrow, hard-packed dirt, deeply rutted with those strange wagon-wheel impressions, never changed. It didn't widen and smooth over to indicate they approached civilization. No rubber tire tread marks appeared. No gravel covered the dirt, nor did blacktop or pavement. No candy wrappers appeared in the grass alongside the road. No soda cans, no plastic bottles, no cigarette butts, no billboard advertisements, no street signs or markers of any kind. It just continued on as it was, seemingly endless. And the people. Twice they encountered other people on the road. Both times Beth remained silent, so shocked the words she wanted to spill froze inside her. First came the merchant. Traveling salesman just did not seem an appropriate title for him. He rode atop a rickety wooden wagon full of who knows what, pulled by an ancient, sway-backed nag that plodded along at the speed of snail and boasted matted fur interspersed with bare patches irritated by flies. Absolute astonishment temporarily supplanted her fears for Josh when the man spoke Middle English. Beth could not help but gape while Robert told the merchant he wasn't interested in any of his wares and questioned him to determine whether or not he had encountered Josh or anyone who might have met Josh's description. She couldn't even guess the man's age. His leathery skin and blonde hair could have used a scrubbing. One of his teeth was missing, the others were discolored. She was pretty sure one was rotting. And he wasn't Amish. He bore no beard and wore no hat, nor did he wear the black suit she had seen Amish men wear so often in pictures and movies. Instead, his clothing looked to be that of a down-on-his-luck tradesman or merchant raised in the era Robert and his friends were mimicking, as if he were part of their reenactment troupe. Except he acted as though he had never met Robert or the others before. She glanced around to assess their responses, expecting to see recognition, and found none. Stephen and Adam weren't even paying attention. They just evinced boredom and a desire to continue their journey. Michael seemed more interested in her own horrified reaction than in the newcomer's identity. When Robert said something sharply, Beth looked back at the merchant in time to see him hastily avert his gaze from her. She had noticed him looking at her strangely throughout the exchange, her jeans in particular, but didn't know why. Nor did she have time to ask, as Robert dismissed the man and nudged Berserker forward.
"Does aught trouble you, my lady?" Michael asked, riding abreast of them. She hesitated.
"Don't you know that man?"
"I have never met him, nay."
She sensed no lie. "Robert, do you know him?" she asked over her shoulder.
"Nay."
The arm wrapped around her waist tightened.
Is he one of the men who attacked you, Beth?
No, she denied. Nay, it's not. Never mind. But it wasn't nothing. The next travelers they came across confirmed that. A man and a boy headed in the same direction as she and the others. The duo resembled each other so closely they must be father and son. Both were garbed in shabbier, more threadbare clothing than the merchant had worn, but seemed clean and could easily have walked off the production set of a medieval movie. The man looked to be in his late 30s, with stooped shoulders and lines bracketing his eyes and mouth, lean and hungry, barely more than skin and bones. She suspected that every spare crumb he came across, he fed to the scrawny 6 or 7 year old boy at his side. Both bowed deferentially to Robert, offering several milords. Neither appeared to have previously met him, and the father spoke and understood Middle English. The whole time the man answered Robert's questions, the boy stared up at Beth with rapt fascination, as though she were Lady Godiva. The boy's father seemed uncomfortable, his eyes darting to and from her in the manner of one who did not dare look too long. She didn't know why. She wore Robert's freshly washed big linen shirt over her jeans and tank top, and she wore her bra beneath the tank top, so it wasn't as if her breasts were hanging out or anything.
"Follow this road to Falsterley," Robert told them. "Find my steward, and he will see that you and your son have a warm meal."
The man bowed several times.
"Thank you, my lord. 'Tis most generous of you, my lord. And I'll work for it, I will. I'm a hard worker."
"I am a hard worker,"
the boy piped, dragging his attention away from Beth long enough to offer an energetic nod. A chill skittered down her spine. The boy spoke Middle English, too.
"I have many talents you might find useful," his father promised, "and I am always willing to put in a hard day's work."
"I am good with horses,"
the boy boasted. Robert nodded.
"We shall speak more of this at Falsterley. I am certain my steward will have need of some of your talents."
"And mine?"
the boy pressed eagerly, ignoring the swift shake of his father's head. Robert's chuckle vibrated Beth's back.
"Aye, and yours as well."
The bowing and scraping began anew. Robert kneed Berserker forward once more, leaving the two to follow on foot. Beth glanced back and felt her throat tighten at the hope that shone on their thin faces as they smiled at each other. The boy took his father's hand and skipped along at his side, grinning in anticipation of the warm meal the two would soon share, the new home they might find ahead of them. Those could not have been actors. It just couldn't have been. Beth had encountered enough homeless men and women in Houston to tell the difference between those who were truly hungry and in need of shelter and those who merely panhandled in their free time to make an easy buck. That man and his son weren't out to make an easy buck. They had suffered some very lean times.
"Does aught trouble you, my lady?"
Adam asked. She faced forward, feeling sick. Though an expectant pause ensued, she offered nothing more. Robert leaned to one side and ducked his head, trying to read her expression.
"What is it, Beth?"
he asked, his voice gentle and coaxing. She shook her head, swallowing hard. How could she tell him that a thought so unbelievable as to be labeled lunatic had entered her mind, making her question her own sanity? Robert, Michael, Adam, Stephen, the merchant, the poverty-stricken father and son, strangers to each other, yet all garbed and behaving the same, all speaking and understanding Middle English, as though they truly were medieval and not merely play-acting or performing a role. It was inconceivable, right? That they were medieval?
Beth?
Of course it was inconceivable. The notion that she had gone back in time was absolutely ludicrous. It wasn't possible, on any scale. The entire scientific community agreed that time travel remained purely theoretical, so she couldn't have gone back in time. Yet realistically speaking, what other explanation was there? If this were all part of some sick, twisted, incredibly extravagant joke that was being perpetrated at her expense, who was doing it?
Who in his or her right mind would take it so far? And why had they chosen her, of all people, as their victim? She was a bail enforcement agent, a bounty hunter, a woman who had no knowledge of anyone who might possess the kind of wealth and connections that would be necessary to pull off something this big.
Robert abandoned his attempts to draw her out and began a whispered conference with Michael and the others. Beth paid them little heed, too busy trying to rationalize her situation.
So, as far as explanations go, the two choices appear to be, she closed her eyes, time travel or a bizarre conspiracy with, what, revenge as the motive? Both sounded equally deranged, which led her to a third option, that whatever wounds she had suffered had left her either brain damaged or mentally unbalanced, and all of this was just some massive delusion. The fact that she was tempted to laugh maniacally did not ease her worries. Time travel didn't yet exist, so that one was pretty much out. Insanity left a bad taste in her mouth, so Beth decided to nix that one, too. That only left her with the implausible scheme or joke. Okay, so someone with a lot of money, never mind that everyone she knew lived from paycheck to paycheck, must have arranged for me to be abducted from that clearing after I was shot. They drugged me? Yes, that was it. They drugged me, patched up my wounds, and, while I was still sedated, transported me to someplace else. Maybe Pennsylvania? Ohio? Indiana? Someplace cooler than Texas, that was for sure. Then, after my injuries healed, they stopped drugging me. Or maybe I was in a coma. That would have worked, too. So when I came out of the coma, they left me in this forest and hired actors to pretend they are medieval knights and peasants and a merchant. So they could... Beth sighed. Even if all of the other stuff were true, which it only would be in a really bad B-movie shown very late at night, what was the point? What was the end game? To make her think she was in medieval England? Yeah, right. To make her think she was crazy? They're succeeding. Why? If someone had wanted her to lose her mind, there were far easier ways to go about it. And except for the bail skippers she and her brother hunted down, who she was fairly certain did not possess such grand connections, she couldn't think of a single person who might wish her harm. Nor could she believe that Robert would participate in such a deception. Feeling utterly confused and defeated, she let her head drop back against Robert's chest and closed her eyes. Maybe this was just another in a long line of crappy television reality shows. Thrust a modern woman into a medieval setting without telling her and watch her crack up. Yeah, right, and get sued 6 ways from Sunday when she realizes what's happened. Besides, how stupid would it be to do that to an armed bounty hunter after shooting her? Because all of this had begun with her getting shot and nearly dying. No television studio would be that stupid, and anyone crazy enough to pitch such an idea would be shut down by the studio's legal team. And again, she couldn't bring herself to believe that Robert would be a part of something that devious, or Michael, or Adam, or even Stephen, as aggravating as he could be. They could have harmed her in so many ways since they had found her, yet they had all been perfect gentlemen. Perfect gentlemen with no apparent knowledge of objects commonly used in the 21st century. Again, she sighed. Maybe this was an occurrence at Owl Creek Bridge thing, and everything around her was a very elaborate fantasy crafted by her mind in the moments before she died. It would make sense, in a weird kind of way, since the last thing she had seen before losing consciousness was Josh. And when they were younger, she and Josh had used Middle English as their secret language, confusing friends who, upon asking what language they were speaking, wouldn't believe them when they had said they were speaking English. But damn, that was an unsettling notion. She wasn't ready to die. Lifting her head, she opened her eyes. Terror engulfed her, as great as that which had pummeled her when she had watched blood spray from Josh's wounds.
Gripping the arm Robert kept around her waist with one hand, she dropped the other to his thigh and clutched it so tightly the chainmail dug into her fingers.
"Stop,"
she whispered through stiff lips. Robert dipped his head.
"What?"
"Stop," she repeated louder.
"You wish me to..."
"Stop, stop, stop!" Berserker did an edgy little dance when Robert halted him. Either the fearsome creature wanted to keep going, or he sensed her fear. Twisting to the left, Beth wrapped both hands around Robert's big arm.
"Help me down. I need to get down."
Too impatient to wait, she threw a leg over the saddle, slid off the huge horse, and landed on the ground with a stagger.
"Beth, what is amiss? Are you ill?"
She barely heard Robert over the sudden pounding in her ears as she turned away. Her heart felt as though it might explode at any moment. Her breath came faster and faster until she feared she might hyperventilate. Stumbling a few yards to the crest of the hill that Berserker's height had allowed her to peer over prematurely, Beth absorbed the fresh scenery before her with something akin to horror. Below them spread a valley, dotted with plump white sheep and cattle, grazing idly on the lush green carpet that overlaid the land. Small huts with thatched roofs appeared and grew in greater frequency as her gaze moved on, ultimately clustering together and forming a sizable village. Farmland, rich and bountiful, wove a gargantuan quilt. People, whom she didn't need to see clearly to know were dressed much the same way the merchant and peasants had been, bustled to and fro as they performed the day's labor. Beyond them, a moat slithered in the shadow of a stone wall whose height and width she could not begin to estimate from this distance, and beyond that, atop the opposite rise, standing proud and majestic in the brilliant sunlight, rose an enormous medieval castle. Her whole body began to shake. Not a few stones piled here and there amidst tangles of overgrowth, not the remains of a medieval castle, or the shell of a medieval castle, or a refurbished medieval castle, preceded by a paved drive, carefully planned flower beds, and a parking lot arranged for tourists' convenience, but a medieval castle that stood in pristine condition. A castle that looked as though it could have been built yesterday. A castle with absolutely nothing modern surrounding it. No city, no suburbs, no small town. No sidewalks, no paved streets, no old-time brick-and-mortar streets. No cars, no trucks, no SUVs, no buses, no motorcycles, no bicycles. No telephone poles, no cell towers, no grocery stores, neither large chain nor mom-and-pop. No post office, no police station, no motels or bed-and-breakfasts welcoming tourists with colorful signs.
"It can't be,"
Beth whispered, as full-blown panic paralyzed her.
"It can't be."
Robert paced back and forth from one side of the road to the other, his gaze fastened on Bethany's back. For almost an hour, she had stood motionless at the top of the hill, limbs stiff, fists clenched, eyes wide, face bloodless. Occasionally, her lips would move, but damned if he could hear one word of whatever she spoke. Every once in a while, she would squeeze her eyes shut and shake her head as though in denial. Glancing to one side, he gauged the response of his men. The three of them lounged in the grass at the edge of the forest, having grown weary of waiting. Though they talked in low voices that eluded him, he did not doubt they speculated about whatever madness afflicted her. His gaze swerved back to Bethany, unsurprised to find she had not moved. She just stood there, staring at his castle, his domain, his grandest possession, with what appeared to be revulsion. A sour feeling invaded his stomach. Fosterly was the largest of his estates. Today he had found himself anticipating their arrival home with joy and pride, eager to show it to her, hoping she would be impressed by it. It was everything he had dreamed of and thought he would never have. And she abhorred it. Why? Losing patience, he marched toward her.
"Beth," he issued curtly as he reached for her shoulder, "I insist that you tell me what is amiss."
He had not truly expected her to cooperate, since she had ignored all of his previous attempts to communicate. so she caught him off guard when, at the first touch of his hand, she turned on him.
"What have you done?" she demanded.
Robert frowned. Was she angry or frightened? He couldn't tell.
"What have you done?"
she shouted, backing away from him. His own ire rising, he strove for patience.
"Beth, I fail to comprehend why you are behaving so strangely. If you dislike Fausterly—"
In the next instant, she reversed direction and advanced on him with large, angry strides, quickly eating up the distance that separated them.
"Where are my guns? I want them back."
His frown deepened.
"You are safe here. I have told you many times that you have naught to fear from us."
In truth, he was growing tired of having to repeat himself.
"I want my weapons back, Beth, now!"
He stiffened.
"'Twould be wise to—" "I need them back!" she bellowed, eyes wild, breath short. "You have no right to keep them. You never should have taken them in the first place. Now give them to me!"
Had he not seen the absolute terror that glowed in her hazel eyes, he would have been furious that she dared speak to him thusly, particularly in front of his men. Not privy to her fear, they no doubt wondered why he did not deal out retribution. It mattered not. Bethany's entire body was quaking with fear. "If you would but calm down," he coaxed. She took another step closer, so close she had to crane her neck to look up at him.
"Give them to me, Robert."
Her voice softened to a whisper, imbued with desperation.
"You said I could trust you. If that's true, then give them to me. Please. I need them."
He had seen men dying on the battlefield who had held this same look of fear in their eyes. Dreading the inevitable, they had only been comforted by those things that were most familiar to them, things that lent them a false sense of security they could cling to until death claimed them. Naught else would appease them. Nor, it seemed, would aught else appease Beth. Swiveling, Robert crossed to Berserker and retrieved the two dark weapons that filled his palms, as well as the one that was the length of his arm. His men watched in silence, faces alert, bodies tensing. Beth waited for him in the road, shifting from foot to foot, chewing her lower lip, her gaze darting all around. Returning to her, Robert held them out. As he had expected, she reached for them as though they were strips of roasted venison and she were perishing of hunger. She confiscated one of the smaller weapons first. Giving it a swift inspection, she removed a thin object from the part of it that fit into her palm and replaced it with another she had tucked in a pocket of her breeches. Once satisfied, she put it in the leather sheath she had strapped to her hip over his tunic. The second weapon she inspected as well, then slid it into her belt. The third and largest weapon she took in both hands. It appeared to have a handle similar to the others. Holding that with her right hand, she slid another part of it back with her left, revealing within a green object with a gold base. Robert would have leaned forward for a closer look, but she closed it and looped the weapon strap over her shoulder in a way that left the weapon dangling beneath her arm, able to be raised at a moment's notice. That done, she looked up at him with wrinkled brow and chewed her lower lip. Beth. How could he ease her fears if she would not speak them? Swallowing hard, she glanced at the men behind him, then turned her gaze to the castle. Why did the gray stone edifice disturb her so? He had seen many more imposing structures in his travels, beginning with his brother's. She wagged her head from side to side in silent despair. Her eyes met his once more, filling with moisture she didn't bother to blink back. "Tell me," he urged. His movement slow and careful, he brushed a tear from her cheek, then cupped her face in his palm. A muscle worked in her jaw as she closed her eyes. "Thank you." 'Twas only a shadow of a sound. When next she opened her eyes, she backed away from him, forsaking his touch, and kept backing away, trekking steadily downhill away from Fausterly. Confused, he cautiously started after her. "Beth?" Shaking her head, she turned and bolted. His men leapt to their feet. "Nay!" Robert threw out a hand to stay them, then gave chase. Beth was fast, a lot faster than she looked,
One would think he would have little difficulty catching someone with legs so much shorter than his own, but with her astonishing speed and head start, he didn't reach her until they were at the base of the hill.
"Beth, cease!"
Grabbing her by one arm, he dragged her to a halt, careful not to harm her or hold her too tightly. She put up a brief struggle, then collapsed against him in tears.
"Why did you run from me?"
he asked, baffled, as he folded his arms around her. Her own arms encircled his waist as she burrowed deeper into him.
"I told you I would never harm you."
Her sobs increased, almost violent in their intensity. Her small hands clutched his back, fisting in his surcoat.
"Why does Fosterly frighten you so? You were well until you saw it. Have you been here before? Mayhap when Lord Hurley was Earl."
A sick feeling invaded his stomach.
"Did he harm you in some way?"
Fury flooded him at the notion.
"You don't understand,"
she sobbed into his chest. "Then tell me, help me to understand. What inspired such fear?"
"I can't tell you,"
she wailed miserably.
"You can. I would no more use your words against you than I did your weapons. You must trust me in this."
Cupping her face in both palms, he forced her to look up at him.
"I vow I only wish to help you, Beth."
Her hazel eyes shimmered with liquid. Her cheeks were blotchy and shiny with tears, her nose rosy. She inhaled with short, choppy gasps. Nevertheless, Robert thought her beautiful. Speaking softly, he drew his thumbs across her cheeks. "Calm yourself now and tell me what has overset you."
"When I saw the castle, I thought I was in England,"
she choked out. He frowned. "You are in England." His words only seemed to upset her more.
"Don't you see?" she cried. "I can't make it work."
"Make what work?"
No one is going to drug me and send me to England."
"Someone drugged you?" he demanded, outraged.
No, nay, that's just it."
He paused. "You think someone intends to drug you?"
Nay.
"Beth, I do not understand. Why are you so distressed?"
Because it means I'm crazy after all."
Her sobs grew louder, her breath hiccuping in between them.
"I'm mad. I'm loony. I'm wacky in the wiki-woo. I'm completely nuts."
Rendered helpless by her tears, Robert let her duck her head and bury her face in his surcoat once more.
"You think you are mad?
That is why you ran?"
"Yes. This can't be real. It's just not possible. It's all some crazy hallucination."
"Nay, Beth, 'tis not. You are not mad. You are merely weary."
Of course you'd say that. You're a hallucination, too."
He smiled. "I assure you, I am quite real."
No, you're not. I made you up in my head. I knew you were too good to be true. I knew it."
Chuckling, he tipped her chin up with one finger. "You think me a mere apparition conjured by a broken mind?" She nodded miserably and bit her lip again, drawing his gaze to it. His pulse leapt. "Then I suppose I shall have to prove otherwise." She was mid-hiccup when he dipped his head and touched his lips to hers. He meant it to be a brief kiss, as light as a breeze. But lightning struck. At least, that was how it felt. One tiny taste and sizzling heat arced through his veins, robbing him of his will and coaxing him to deepen the contact. Beth froze in his arms, her only movement the erratic lifting of her breasts against his chest by residual sobs and the softening of her full pink lips. Then she tentatively returned the gentle pressure. And he was lost. Combing his fingers through her soft, fragrant hair, Robert cupped the back of her head, tilting it to allow him greater access. He splayed his other hand across her back, urging her closer until her body was flush against his own. She tasted so good as she had in his dreams last night. Heated, erotic fantasies that had led him to fondle her sweet curves in his sleep and awaken hard and longing to fulfill every one. Her hands crept up his chest, slid over his shoulders, and dove into his hair. Heart racing, Robert drew his tongue across the seam of her lips. They parted on another gasp. Groaning, he took swift advantage and delved within, exploring, caressing, stroking, and inflaming. She moaned in response and rose onto her toes, sinking fully into him as her tongue dueled with his own. Robert felt his control begin to slip and fought the need to slide his hands down those form-fitting breeches, cup the bottom that had been rubbing against him, and grind her hard against his arousal. A sensual shudder shook him, or better yet, lift her up so she could wrap her legs around him and cradle him in between. Dragging his lips from hers, he clutched her tightly for several heart-pounding seconds, then forced himself to relax his hold. Both were breathless. He leaned back just enough to look down at her. Tears no longer fell, he was pleased to see. Instead, desire lit the eyes she raised to meet his own. "Would an apparition do that?" he inquired, voice husky, already regretting the moment he would have to release her. Her lips tilted up in a ghost of a smile.
"Probably, but not half so well. My imagination isn't that sharp."
He laughed. She sobered.
"I'm serious, Robert. I really do think I'm crazy."
"And I am just as certain you are not." Tenderly, he smoothed the hair back from her face. "Either way, I will not abandon you."
"You say that now, but
you may tell me all once we reach Fosterley," he assured her. "You will accompany me the rest of the way to my home, will you not?"
She sighed. He had a feeling she agreed simply because she believed she had nowhere else to go.
"I must ask a boon of you first." Her gaze turned wary.
"What kind of boon?"
"That you do not use your weapons to harm any of my people." Her eyebrows rose.
"You'd take a crazy person's word for it?"
"I would take your word for it." She nodded.
"Okay, I promise not to shoot anyone."
"You have my gratitude."
"Unless they try to hurt me, or you, then all bets are off."
He smiled, understanding her meaning, if not all of her words. She still wished to protect him.
"As you wish. Now, what say you? Shall we continue our journey?"
"Wait." She grabbed his arm as he started to turn away. "Aye." She had not changed her mind already, had she? A small, curious smile lit her tear-ravaged features.
"Give me another kiss first, just to settle my nerves."
Grinning, Robert was more than happy to oblige. Chapter 8. Beth's lips still tingled as they approached the village that preceded the castle. She could not believe she had asked Robert to kiss her when she was on the brink of a mental breakdown. But for a moment, after that first tentative contact, her worries had deserted her. Pure, sizzling heat had supplanted them, stealing her breath and robbing her of all reason. She had had no idea desire could consume her so swiftly. It certainly never had in the past. Granted, she wasn't very experienced in that area. She hadn't really dated much in high school. Okay, she hadn't dated at all in high school. She had been a late bloomer, something her blushing father had awkwardly assured her ran in the family, when Beth had bemoaned the fact that she still hadn't gotten her period by the time she had turned 14, even though her friends had all long since become women. Her diminutive height, combined with her flat chest and slim hips, had made her appear several years younger than the other girls her age. Far too young, it seemed, to interest hormone-driven teenage boys who were too busy chasing girls with big boobs to even notice her. By the time Beth had finally acquired some curves, she had been studying her ass off in college and forcing her way into the family business, which had left little time to socialize. She had managed to go out with a few guys, though, some more than once. She'd shared kisses, touches, but nothing more. Not after what had happened with Josh. When he was 19, Josh had received a phone call from a former girlfriend who had informed him she was HIV positive and advised him to get tested. Beth had found out quite by accident and had almost wept with relief when the test had come back negative, but the incident had scared them both so badly that neither Beth nor Josh even considered engaging in casual sex.
Condoms didn't offer 100% protection, and neither one of them believed a moment's pleasure with someone they didn't love was worth the risk. So in the years since, Josh had had only two lovers, and Beth had had none. Which hadn't been that big of a deal. None of the guys she had dated had knocked her socks off or fueled her desire, not the way Robert had. Whew, that man could kiss. She had been so stimulated that just having his arm looped around her waist now kept her heart pounding and left her breathless until they reached the village. Every once in a while, foul aromas would assail her. Beth didn't know if the odors originated from the animals or poor sewer drainage or what. She didn't think it came from the people, but more than one didn't exactly appear to make good personal hygiene a high priority. None of the men and women, or children for that matter, appeared slothful, though. Each seemed to have his or her own purpose and duty to perform. Each went about performing that duty diligently, pausing to greet Robert with friendly smiles full of respect and what appeared to be an almost overabundance of relief. And to stare at Beth, of course. What was it about her that made so many gape? Sure, her hair wasn't braided and curled uncontrollably. Thanks to Robert's plunging fingers, it was probably more messy than usual, too. But she didn't exactly resemble Medusa. Was it Robert's shirt? It did hang on her like a flour sack, constantly slipping off one shoulder to reveal the dark tank top beneath. She didn't really mind the slippage, though, because Robert always dragged it back up with his big hand, leaving a wicked warmth behind that provided a welcome distraction. "These are your people?" she inquired softly.
"Aye."
Her knowledge of world history was fairly limited, so she wasn't sure how the whole peasant-nobleman infrastructure worked. As she looked around her, though, she decided that here it appeared to work pretty well. These people seemed to bear true fondness for Robert. And, though she didn't see many elderly men and women, the people she did see all seemed in good physical condition. Some were in need of a bath or missing a tooth here or there, but their bodies seemed healthy.